reason that I'm here is because, you know, the club is seeking change.
He said, well, whether you come or not, you're going to see a completely different first team under me.
You know, my hope and my desire and what I'm going to try and do is give our supporters hope and belief that we're going to embark on something special.
Welcome into the Tottenham Depot. I am your host, Andrew. This is episode 177, and this is a little bit of an impromptu episode of the Tottenham Depot because I told you all after last Sunday's episode that we were not going to do a podcast after the Chelsea match. We're just going to double up on the weekend and talk Chelsea and Liverpool, and as well as the women's game on Saturday. But Scott and I got to chatting, and we both decided that this kind of a defeat in a London derby is you can't leave it on the table. We were chomping at the bit to kind of get on the microphone and get some things off of our chest. So I welcome in Scott at Scott G Bird on the socials. Scott, what's going on, my friend?
Not chilling, like I usually say. Not chilling today. What a stupid result, and we'll get into all of that, but good to always have a nice podcast to fall back on when you're ready to punch holes through walls and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm gonna forewarn the listeners. Like, I came home from work, watched this game on delay today, and was nice and comfy on the couch and just like chilling out. And then I decided to pull the yellow legal pad for those of you watching on YouTube, and took notes throughout the game. And I've got some talking points, like, and I think that the first part of this pod, and look, I don't think we're going to go like full pod here. We're going to rap about this game and then get out of here and leave the next few days to calm down. And we'll probably revisit a little bit on Sunday following Liverpool. But I think we wanted to come on here and vent a little bit. And then at the end, we're just going to say, but we stick with the plan. Like, this is still early. Like, I am going to be rational in my long-term views of what's going on with this club. And I'm going to be rational in the sense that this is a project that is still in the early days. And I'm not going to blow my top and say anything ridiculous that would get me aggregated or would, you know, that I'm sure I haven't really dove into the social media world this afternoon after this match, after we watched this. I've seen a few things, not a lot. I kind of just finished watching and messaged the group and said, hey, does anyone want to get some thoughts off their chest? And Scott replied, I do too. So we're hopping on the mics. This is very impromptu, just for the listeners. I'm not Ange out. I know many people are already jumping to those conclusions. I'm not in any of these crazy places that supporters go after a result like this. But this result, Scott, was dreck. I mean, this was really, really dreadful football to watch. And I think part of this too is that it's Chelsea and that it's Pochettino for me. Like, I'm being honest, I'm speaking emotionally, and I don't normally do a lot of the emotional heavy lifting on this pod. I kind of try to bounce you guys around and like host a little bit more, but I'm emotional about this loss. This is one of the worst Chelsea teams that we have seen in years, and we got 0 points off of them this season. And that's really, really disappointing. And yes, I hate to say it, but it's made more disappointing because of who's manning their sideline. And I go back to, I haven't lost faith in Ange in any way, shape, or form, but the last two results have been extremely troubling for me. And I get that there are extenuating circumstances, but man, the PR for him right now, I want to start with set pieces. We're going to go back to the lineup and stuff, but the set piece PR for me, that is, like, let's just address that head on and then move on to the actual game, because that's really like not a good look for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, when he made those comments, I think if you look at it in less of a vacuum, you know, than we all want to as fans, it's probably not something that's a huge long-term concern for him, but it's leading to drop points at this point in time, and it's a visibly glaring issue to the fan. I think the biggest issue that I take with those comments is, one, it's going to upset people amongst the fan base. And as a manager, you have to be careful about what you say and how your fans may react to it. The fans are extremely important. And two, it was only going to lead to a ton of issues for him himself as Ange Postecoglou in forthcoming press conferences. Everyone was going to eat him alive about it. We saw it today. We saw him get flustered. But if you look at the stats today, 62% possession for Tottenham, 11 shots, nine corners, right? And we produced nothing from them and gave up two set-piece goals. In our system, and I think this is one of the issues that I take beyond what I just said with the whole set-piece thing. And again, I don't think it's a long-term problem, but the way that we play, when we're in possession, we're looking to find space behind the fullbacks. Great. That's why we see a lot of goals that are low crosses from wing to wing, right? Werner de Johnson was the theme for us for a while. When you play that way, you're gonna win a lot of corners, and that's awesome. I mean, I love corners, right? The system is designed to win corners. We do absolutely nothing with them offensively. So if you know, and he has to know, he's a smart manager, he has to know that his style of play suits corners, be prepared to do something with them, right? You cannot have nine corners to their four and lose to, and I know neither of their goals are from a corner, right? But when you have over double the amount of corners that your opponent has and they beat you on two set pieces, it's just not a good look, right? And so you couple that with the comments that he made, dude's going to get shredded in the media for the next at least month about this, right? Without a question. And he's brought it on himself.
He was getting shredded even during the match on the American broadcast a little bit, talking about, you know, and I think, look, all caveats, it was Lee Dixon. So people are going to say, well, there's bias there. I thought Lee Dixon had a really good broadcast today on the Peacock broadcast here in the U.S. So I won't really take anything. You know, I know Todd is going to probably hear that and like lose his mind, but like, I thought he was really fair. Yeah, I thought he was really fair because he just said, you know, you're giving up goals from defensive set pieces and you're saying that it wouldn't make a difference. But it and that's not his exact quote, but like you get the point I'm trying to make. Like there's a and you what you referenced earlier about him getting flustered was with a reporter. I believe it was, I don't know who carried the game in England. It was a British broadcast. It was a Sky or someone that he was doing a one-on-one interview with, and I think got as testy as I've seen him with a singular reporter. I mean, we've seen him get a little bit bothered in press conferences at times, but not to this extent. He seemed really pissed off during the first half of this match. They had a lot of shots of him on the broadcast of him yelling and trying to direct traffic more than we normally see him on the touchline. And I thought that was really notable. He seems pissed off, and look, I'm happy about that. And again, I'm happy about the fact that he knows it's not good enough. He's not just being ho-hum and blaming players. And I mean, he took responsibility. He took all the responsibility. He said they didn't look prepared to play tonight, and that's his problem. That's his fault. And he needs to do better. I can appreciate at least a manager that's going to take responsibility, but boy, howdy, if this team doesn't turn it around over the next few weeks and really, really limps into the finish, I mean, there are four games left and obviously two of them are against, you know, very superior opponents and two of them are against, you know, not as good opponents, but it's not like any of those games are guaranteed at this point. It's super frustrating to watch them limp this way. And I know the season as a whole, we're going to look back and say, well, there were a lot of extenuating circumstances, but being in it right now. And like I said, the emotional response to this game is hard. And it's especially hard when it's back-to-back matches against those two teams that it looked this kind of lackluster. And that's not even being fair. Cause I thought we really played okay against Arsenal. A lot of things went wrong in that match. And things went against us, but in this one, it didn't look like we belonged on the same pitch as a Chelsea team that is, I will once again say that they are dog water. Like they are a trash team. They are not good. And they took all 6 points off of us this season. And that's, I think the part again, where I speak emotionally about this match. What did you think about the lineup changes? Cause I actually, when I looked at the lineup, I was pretty encouraged. I thought, I mean, other than the fact that Emerson Royal is the only option at left back following the news that Ben Davis is out for the rest of the season, which is just, you know, not even something that we had gotten knowledge of on Sunday when we did our pod after the Arsenal match, but that's just a really tough break. So notwithstanding Emerson Royal having to come in, which I don't think he's a suitable right back in the system. I certainly don't think he's a suitable left back in this system. And I don't want to pick on him too hard, but goodness me, that was a really, really bad performance from him today. But the rest of the lineup, I thought, okay, I kind of like these changes. I liked that Ange had the courage to drop James Maddison. I liked the fact that Richarlison's up top and Sonny's back out wide. And honestly, I liked the way that the Bissouma Sarr midfield looked on paper to come in behind Kulusevski. What was your thought on all the changes, obviously with a midweek game and another one looking ahead to Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the changes were necessary, and you really put together the best lineup you could with what you had at your disposal, especially at the left-back position. I had called for Kulusevski for Maddison last Sunday when we spoke, and so I was glad to see that. And I was glad to see Brennan get a start, and like you, I was glad to see Richarlison and Son in their respective roles that they were placed into today. But I still I'm never pleased at this point when I see Bissouma on the field, and I'm not a Bissouma fan. I'll continue to be outspoken about that. I don't like him, you know, as a character necessarily. I think he's also proven that it's just not working, and I don't think that has to be permanent. But he fell off a cliff after, you know, when he left for AFCON, and he's not come back from that. From a form perspective, he really doesn't do anything that a six needs to do in this system, and so I wasn't thrilled to see him. I was happy to see Pape Sarr. I'm also going to say Pape Sarr's form has taken a big hit too, and that's AFCON and all of that too, right? We understand that, but I was thinking today there were so many Spurs fans 3 or 4 months ago saying, why are we talking so much about Kobbie Mainoo over at Man United? Pop Sarr is the name, and doesn't appear to be that way right now, right? There's a gulf between those two, and I'd like to see him overcome that and get back to that the comparisons and conversations there, because he can be a real talent, but we've not seen it from him lately, and I think he had a rough one too. So, you know, I'll agree with you on paper. It looked good and functional and all of that. I think the six, again, I'll put an asterisk next to you because I don't feel confident with anyone in that role at this point in time, right? But I think everything else was as good as Ange had available to him. And maybe that begs the bigger, you know, begs the conversation around the bigger issue in that our best available 11 goes out and puts out a stinker like that. Maybe you got bigger problems than availability, right? We talk a lot about how a proper team that goes and wins a title, it's all hands on deck and next man up or next woman up, right? And everybody goes and does their job. And we certainly don't see that from Tottenham. And I think that's part of the bigger problem here.
I would totally agree with that. Every word of it, honestly. I thought that there were a few good performances on the pitch. I thought both the center backs looked really, really strong, especially for what they were facing. Van de Ven, just another... I don't know what other superlatives there are for both these guys. They're the ones that have been on form, and it's ironic because we're still allowing goals on set pieces, but we're not allowing much of anything from open play right now, especially over the last handful of matches. And I also thought that Pedro Porro looked bright in moments, but aside from that, I mean, there are a few players' performances. I already, you know, said what I had to say about Emerson Royal. I don't really need to go there any further. He's playing out of position and frankly out of the type of formation and team fit that I think he's best suited for. I agree with your thoughts on the midfield. I thought Bissouma looked okay, kind of holding up play early on, but wasn't really able to get anything else going. Same with Richarlison. Richarlison really had some nice hold up play in this match, I thought. But other than that, I mean, what else is the striker supposed to do in this system? I want to talk about both the wings, because I thought both Brennan Johnson and Heung-Min Son were really bad in this game. Like, there's just no other way to put it. Brennan had the ball at his feet a lot, and it wasn't for a lack of effort. I just thought there was a lack of execution on Brennan Johnson's part throughout this match. I mean, he let Kukurea look like the man of the match. I don't think Kukurea had really had that great of a match, but he was the man of the match because he was showing up so many times, blocking crosses and just defending, really just had Brennan Johnson completely in his pocket. And with Sonny, I, I don't know what there is to say about Sonny at this point. There's going to be a lot of conjecture about Sonny this summer, I think. And I think it's going to be unfounded. This is still a guy who is the leading goal scorer on this team. Had the Asian Cup in the middle of the season. It's been a really weird and disjointed season for Sonny. And I think we also might be seeing a little bit of the effects of the newer leadership role on him. Not to say that he hasn't handled it well, but I think there's a lot more on Sonny's shoulders than people realize now as kind of stepping up as the face of this club. And I think maybe in the tail end of the season, we're starting to see a little bit of that show on him just from a fatigue standpoint. He just does not look the same player that he did before, really before the Asian Cup, before in the first half of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that is easy as all fans to forget with Son is that he's not getting any younger and still a young man by all means. We're talking soccer terms here, right? But, you know, he's kind of at that stage in his career where people expect more than you're able to give because they're living in the past, right? Sonny's getting up there. It's been a wild ride, but I don't think we can bank on 90 minutes from him every match. And if you remember in our 10 games unbeaten run to start the season, Son was yanked at like the 65th minute of every match. And we were on this podcast wondering like, why is Sonny coming off so early? And I'm sure, you know, one of the more intelligent people than myself on this pod said something about, you know, he's getting older and we need to keep his legs. But yeah, maybe we're seeing some of that right now. But ultimately, I think the biggest issue with the wings, first of all, before I get to that, I think Brennan Johnson too. You know, it's interesting because we talked a lot about him over the last few months. You know, is he better off the bench? Is he better in a starting role? I think somebody who does what he does so well, which is find space behind tired legs, maybe is better suited off the bench. And I think we've seen really good performances from him as a substitute. Okay, as a starter, right? But could be some of it. But ultimately, I think it's all in the midfield. When you can't possess the ball and you can't find the right patterns of play, it makes it really hard for the wings to be effective. When you can't find space and you're on the wing, it's suffocating, right? You end up in the corner with the ball, with three guys closing in on you, with almost every touch. And again, it's more than that. We know Brennan had opportunities today, but my point is when the midfield's not functioning well, it's really hard for the wings to make an impact on and get in the rhythm with regards to the flow of the play. So I think that's a lot of what we're seeing right now.
I don't disagree with you. I think the midfield is kind of the central the patterns of the play. You said it there. Like I didn't see decisiveness at all in what Spurs were doing in this match. Even though they did have, you know, you said it's hard to possess the ball. They are possessing the ball. They're just not doing anything with it. I mean,
yeah, thank you. We're keeping the ball really well. Yeah.
We are for much of the game, 63% of it in this match. And so there were like a few big chances in this match, but the XG will reflect that. But, you know, there was the Romero header, which, again, like that's the third missed header he's had in the last two matches, which is tough to take. And it's tough to really be that harsh on him because he's playing so well. There was the Brennan Johnson chance late on where he was kind of right there for, I wouldn't call it a tap in, but a really high percentage chance. They're getting opportunities. They're just not executing. And it's not as many opportunities, obviously, as you would like. And I do think that the midfield has a lot to do with that. There's not a lot else that I have from a notes perspective that is like super, super duper prevalent. I guess the early penalty shout on Emerson, I did think maybe deserved to be looked at. Like, I don't know what we're doing here. That was definitely like there was way less made of that than I thought there probably should have been. It looked like Emerson was just tugged down in the box and what are we doing? But again, that's relying on the PGMOL to do their jobs, which is not going to happen. And then they tried to overdo the job when Chelsea did score their first goal. They spent like 3.5 minutes reviewing two different things that I thought certainly did not need to be reviewed. There was no offside, certainly, and there was no foul in the buildup. I thought that was really ridiculous as well. So they seem to be spending their time in the wrong places, if you ask me. But I thought that was just – otherwise, I thought that the game was officiated fine. It was really weird that there was only one yellow card in a London derby, and it didn't come until really late. That was pretty bizarre, if you ask me. But what else did you have from this one, man? We thought we'd just come on here and wrap a little bit. I mean, this is, from a big picture standpoint, like I said, this is not one of those this is the end of the world type of matches for me. It's just I wanted to get on the mics and rap a little bit about how kind of shitty this was to watch. And it was really shitty to watch.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think there's some big picture stuff that's worth talking about here, too. First of all, I firmly am invested in Ange Postecoglou. I would never even want to be, you know, within the vicinity of people who want Ange Postecoglou sacked. I just think that what we're seeing is an exact example of how many times he had told us we're going to run into issues and we're going to have some bumpy rides along the way. I think he is visibly frustrated, you know, when he's come out and said things like, I maybe don't have everybody, you know, bought in as much as I would like, you know, from staff and players alike. Those kind of things make you start to see that he's frustrated, right? And things maybe aren't working as well. And he's talked a lot about how, you know, there's a difference between people doing things because he tells them to, or doing things because they firmly believe that it's the right way to do things, right? There's a big difference there. So I think we're at the point in the season where he knows who he's rocking with going forward, and he knows who's just not right for him going forward as well. And we're just at a point where you can't do much about that, and we're tired. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of work to do. It's as simple as that. I think when you look at where we are on the table, we're fifth. I think there's a conversation, do we end fifth? There's definitely a conversation there, right? But we're fifth in the table right now. And a lot of people would have taken that at the start of the season, right? A lot of people would have been happy finishing in the Europa League place with the new project in front of us and all of that. So I don't think that we're in crisis by any means here, but we're in a situation where there's going to have to be a lot of work done in the windows. And as a longstanding Tottenham fan, that's not something that I believe happens at this club quite yet. I'm seeing that happen more and more as we progress, right? I think especially since we got into the stadium, it's happening more and more, but there's a lot of work to do. And the biggest thing that we've got to do is we've got to move a lot of guys on. We're going to have to replace them, and that takes work, but we're going to have to move a lot of guys on. And this club historically, I think its biggest issue in the transfer market is that it doesn't move on players correctly. It doesn't time right from an outgoing perspective. We hold on to players too long. We maybe sell them too early. We maybe focus a little bit more on the return on investment than in the football that will produce from the decision-making itself, right? And that's cost us. And again, I think things are changing. I'm not even getting remotely close to Levy out or any of that bullshit here either, but there's just a lot of work to do. And I think it's daunting as a Spurs fan because that work that's required has not gone very well for us in the past. So, you know, I'm rocking with Ange. I'll continue to believe in what he's doing. But I think if you look at the issue right now in comparison to the bigger problem, or in relation to the bigger problem and the long term, it's that we've got a bunch of players right now who just, you know, we've seen for years probably just aren't cut out for it, and they're certainly not cut out for an Ange system. And I love Ange. I'm ranting here, but last thing I'll say, I love Ange coming out and owning it and saying it's on me, I'm the manager and all of that, but it's on the fucking players. Like, they're not doing what's expected of them from Ange Postecoglou. The guy's clear as a whistle in what he wants. He's an excellent and eloquent leader who deserves everything from his players. And if the instructions are not playing out on the pitch, I appreciate Ange Postecoglou taking responsibility, but those guys are professional athletes. And if they're not, you know, following instructions from the manager who clearly knows what he's doing, then it's on them. And it's time for us to continue to reinvest in the playing staff. And I think things will get better from there.
There's going to be a lot said over the final four matches, as well as, you know, into the early part of the summer about just where this project is going. And I think it's important that we still realize that this is year one of what was always going to be called a long and hard and painful rebuild. And I know people, you know, I've said this on the pod before, but like, I know people want to say, this isn't year one, this is year three or four, but no, it's year one. This was an actual restart, a hard restart that this club did. Not just in terms of the manager, but in terms of revamping the recruitment staff and, some of the analytics and, everything around, you know, this project is still in its very, very early days. But if it looks this bad a year in, when we've seen it look good, that's what makes it hurt so much. 'Cause we've seen it look good. And it's just, it does make it kind of tough. You brought up, you know, Champions League could be fully done and dusted by the end of the weekend. If the results don't break right. And I don't really have any faith in that anyway. We're now 7 points back of Villa with only the one game in hand. But at this point, when I look below us in fifth on the table, I start to actually worry, because I know it's only four games, but you're only 6 points clear of United for sixth, 7 points clear of Newcastle for seventh. You're only 9 points clear of this damn Chelsea team for eighth. Like, I'm not saying that it's going to be that much of a free fall, but I do start to like look over my shoulder and say, is this even a Europa League team next year? Is it a Conference League team, or is it going to be in Europe at all? And I know that that's could sound a little panicky, but if, you know we have Liverpool, we know we have City, and the other two matches are inherently winnable, obviously, but there's no guarantees. So it does make it a little bit tough to swallow when you look at not only the long term, but the short term especially looks really tough. I think we're going to have to like take these next 3 weeks for these four matches and really like grit our teeth to get through to the end of the season. And that's kind of a shame, because I don't feel like we've had a season in a couple of years where we were looking forward to the end of the season and wanting to finish strong instead of just wanting this season to fucking end already. 'Cause it's been really, really brutal. And it's like, you just want to get to the summer and see what this team can build on, and also get some bodies back that are continuing to drop like flies at the tail end of a marathon.
Yeah. It doesn't look great when you look at the table and you look at form. That's for sure. You and I have been talking about that. I think Liverpool and City absolutely run over us, and it's not even a contest. And again, I don't even think that's reactionary. I think that's a prediction I'm making based on what we've seen over the last month from all three of those sides. Right, and Liverpool hasn't been great, but they're going to wax us. I think Sheffield will be interesting. Sheffield has been relegated. That means they could be playing freely, right? The pressure is off now. They know what their fate is. Could also mean that there's guys who are fighting for an opportunity to stay in the Premier League for another club. Probably not, right? Maybe three or four of them. But you never know with that type of club. And then I'll tell you what, Burnley's in form. I know where they're at in the table, but they've climbed out of sure relegation over the past 2 months. And their last five results, a win, three draws, and one loss. And one of those draws was at Old Trafford. So, you know, they're playing pretty good football, and I watched those matches, and it was visibly appealing football as well. So we'll see. I think it's dicey. My prediction is that we take 4 points. I think we beat Sheffield, and I think we draw Burnley. And then, like I said, I think Liverpool and City, you know, wipe the floor with us. And I just don't know if those 4 points are enough to stay in fifth. I really don't want to play in the Conference League. I know that there is people that might not agree with me, but and I don't want to not be in Europe. So my God, get it done, boys. Get your shit together. I really would like to see us compete in the Europa League next year. I think that'd be a lot of fun. And Champions League's done, so we don't need to have that conversation.
Yeah, the Champions League is done, and like I said, could officially be done by the time we talk again on Sunday. But if you're giving us 4 more points, that means that Manchester United need to come up with 11 points from their final 4 matches. Which is obviously winning them all.
They won't.
So I doubt that they would either, but you know, I'm just saying there's a non-zero here, like that we need to look at.
Well, so, and I mean, there's again, I feel like I'm just beating on Tottenham Hotspur right now, but there's every reason to think that we come out withdraws or by God a loss even in one of those matches against Sheffield or Burnley. I don't think so, but I could see two draws. I mean, I do think we draw Burnley, but if you look at our results, I mean, we haven't played well since AFCON and the Asian Cup took place, honestly. We really haven't. We found some results, but our form in 2024 is not good. I think it's 6 wins, 5 draws, and 4 losses, right? So you're talking only winning just about 50% or less than 50% of your matches, right? That's 6 games you won and 9 games you haven't, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
That was, so that's not great.
I haven't checked all of your math because you were spouting out a lot of numbers there, but
it sounded
right. Well, if there's anything I know, it's that Scott is our numbers guy. That's all I got, man. You got anything else you need to get off your chest? I figured we would pop in here and do a little bonus pod for the folks and come back to them on the weekend, hopefully with some clearer hearts. And I know we're probably going to have to talk about potentially another harsh defeat. But you know, it's going to be all part of the growth process with this team. And you know, still a lot to look forward to, obviously, but only 4 more opportunities for this men's team to get their shit together. And I just hope it happens sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no, and on that note, I'll just say what we're all thinking. Just the men's team can kiss my ass and let's go win the FA Cup on the women's side.
God, wouldn't that be nice? We're going to have more to say about that at the weekend. We will look forward to the FA Cup, which is a week from Sunday. They, of course, play at Everton on Saturday. So that's an early match. I'm sure I'll be watching that one on replay. And then Liverpool this Sunday for the men. So we'll be back with you guys to chat after that one. Thanks to Scott. He is at Scott G Bird on the Twitters. I am at Astetka. You can follow us at Tottenham Depot on all your socials and be sure to check out the YouTube as well. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday. Until then, this has been the Tottenham Depot podcast. As always, come on, you Spurs.